Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Rob Greaves here, and I'm glad you've joined me for part two of a three-part program featuring Phyllis Smith. To recap on part one, Phyllis turns 100 in May of this year. Born in Tasmania, her grandparents are her primary carers for many of her early years of life. Her mother remarries, and Phyllis returns to her mother's home. But her stepfather, who can only be described as an uncaring manipulator, makes life miserable for her, and she runs away three times. Eventually, on growing up, she finds a career with cooking and minding children in their homes. At times, very much like a nanny, and she's good at what she does. Jobs in Sydney give her great confidence in herself. At the outbreak of World War II, she returns to Tasmania and becomes the first female to gain a bus driving license in that state. In part two, we cover a lot of ground. Humour consistently penetrates through her stories, and there are few more funnier than her attempt to smoke. She's also able to provide some stories, one very chilling in particular, about her uncle, who was an Anzac. Before we know it, her story is suddenly about rabbits, dogs, and how a clean floor made muddy led to Phyllis meeting her husband-to-be, Ted. And this leads to how she's become, currently, the oldest living elder of the Yarra tribe. This program finishes with Phyllis telling the story of her and Ted taking to the road in a covered wagon with a ferret and a dingo. Also, we're joined during the program by Phyllis's bird, so you'll hear him chirping away in the background. But we start with Phyllis talking about how she loved dancing.
I love dancing, so I used to go in and dance as well. And when it was time, I'd say, "Don't go outside, I want to see you all. Come on."
Did you have a favourite style of dancing?
I just love dancing.
Just dancing.
My girlfriend, she didn't dance, but her boyfriend was a really good dancer, so we used to dance. We used to do competition dancing, you know, exhibition.
Oh, right.
And my mother would say to her, "How can you let him dance with Phyllis?" I said, "You should only dancing with us." She said, "I'm here watching."
So was this sort of like ballroom, Pride of Erin?
Oh, yeah, ballroom
dancing.
Right. Waltzes and Pride of Erin.
Yes.
Two steps, everything. Minuet, everything you like.
They were very popular in those days, weren't they?
Yeah.
Dancers were everywhere.
Beautiful dancers.
Yes. Did you meet any boys?
Oh, yes, I had stacks of friends, you know, but they were friends. I messed it around. It was just friends. There was a whole lot of us. We sort of grew up together, and most of them smoked. "Why don't you smoke?" "I don't want to." I said, "When I'm home, I'm knitting all the time. I can't have a hand struggling cigarettes." Anyway, they got on my nerves one night. "Oh, you're frightened. You're a sook. You're frightened." I was not frightened of anybody or anything. "Well, come on, every day and have a cigarette." "All right," I thought, "so I get this cigarette. What do I do?" I said, "Well, draw the light the match, draw it in." I drew it in and swallowed the whole part
of it. I bet that was your first and last.
It was. I couldn't stand up. Two of the girls took me home. I didn't remember. Mum said, "What's the matter with her? What made her sick?" Mum said, "What can I smell?" Because she had a cigarette. "Put her in her room. I don't want to know about it." And I said to Jessie, "Bring me a drink of water." She said, "She will not bring you a drink of water. You wanted to get out and get it, but I can't stand, well, crawl." And I had to.
Look,
crawl.
I mean, it's funny to listen to 70 years later, but at the time it was obviously very serious.
Oh, I was that sick, yes. Crawled out, pulled myself up to the sink and got drink of water.
Oh,
2 days I couldn't get out of bed.
Gosh.
And
really
years and years and years after, when my youngest sister was married and had 4 children, she was living up in the country a bit. And Doug, her husband, picked me up to take me up for the day or the night or some such thing. And on the way, he said, "Oh, Phil, get the cigarette, will you?" I got down the glove box, went to give it. He said, "I'll light it for you, will you?" And I went, "Oh," so I couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't.
Yes.
It all came back to me, that horrible feeling. I said, "No, Doug, I couldn't light it."
Yes.
He laughed at me. I said, "No, no laughing matter, I couldn't."
Well, as I said, it's a very funny story to listen to now, but it was, it obviously had a big effect on your life.
Oh, golly gosh.
Incredible effect.
But I was thankful it happened because if I'd have learned to smoke it properly, maybe I would have smoked.
Maybe you would have, that's right. So sometimes things happen at the time, you think what an awful thing, but later on you look back and you think, well, thank goodness.
That's right, thank goodness for it.
Do you remember the end of the Second World War?
Oh, yes.
You would have been what? You would have been about 30 years of age or so, or a bit older.
I was about 27, I think, 28. Somewhere in the 20s, I think I was. Oh, we had dancing and shouting and
right.
going on.
Did you ever feel frightened during the war? Did you ever fear for yourself?
No. What will be, will be. I think what God's planned out for you will happen.
Mm.
No matter what you do, whether you're frightened or whether you're happy or whatever, if it's going to happen, it'll happen. My uncle was an Anzac. I remember him coming back from the Anzac. I was sitting up on Grandpa's shoulders and I'm saying, is that you, Grandpa? No, dear. There's Uncle. No, dear. I'm thinking, is the Uncle
going to ever come? Is he going to come, yes.
Where is he, Grandpa? Just be quiet, dear. He'll come in a minute. Soldier come up. There's Uncle. There's Uncle Roy. I'd like. Shh, Grandpa said, don't scream out like that. That's not nice for a little girl. But I want to call him. Well, wait till he gets down here, dear.
Are you a son?
Oh, dear, had to wait.
Yes.
Now, it would have been right, but then he had bits of shrapnel through his body, and of course, those days they couldn't get it out.
Right.
He just gradually went down and down and down until, yes. I think, about 2.5 years after he got back, he died. Oh, poor Uncle Arthur. Didn't tell me, but he told Grandpa and him, I heard it, I don't know how. His mate would then go down the trench, and this other mate said, one of the boys that he went over with, I want to have a look out. I said, don't. He said, put your hat on your bonnet and put it up. So he did, of course, shot straight off.
Yes.
Oh, he said, they reckon they've shot me now, so I'll be able to have a look. Uncle Arthur said, don't. Anyway, put his head up. His body came back, but his head didn't. So Uncle Arthur said, I tried to tell him, he wouldn't listen.
Probably something that was repeated over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, we lost so many wonderful young men to such a stupid piece of action.
Yeah, war was terrible.
So at the end of the Second World War, did you stay on in Hobart or did you get the taste for going back onto the mainland?
I got the itches again.
I had a suspicion you might have. How did that all come about?
See, I had all the cooking that I'd done. And I thought, oh, this is waste here. I've got something here. I said to Mum, I'm going to Sydney. She said, you're going to do what? I said, I'm going to Sydney. Oh, my God. She said, no, Melbourne. I'd been to Sydney. Melbourne. I'm going to Melbourne. Girls, stay home. I said, no, I don't want any, Mum. I want to see something, do something.
Of course.
I was going to work my way around Australia, cooking. Oh, well, she said, if that's what you want, that's what you want. So I got over. The same thing, landed in Melbourne. Didn't know where. Met up with a lady on the boat, actually, coming across. And she said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. She said, what do you mean you don't know? She was a middle-aged lady, you know. I said, well, no, I don't know. I said, I just want to come over here and get a job.
Mm.
She said, what do you do? I said, cooking. Oh, she said, oh, not down to Hillsville. I said, where's Hillsville? I don't know. And she said, up the line, she said, oh, there's two ladies, old maids they are, she said, they've got a boarding house and they need a cook. I said, oh, sounds all right. So up I go to them out to Badger Creek.
How did you get out there? Because we wouldn't have...
Oh, well, she had... her people.
Oh, she took you out there,
her.
Did she?
Her husband was meeting her, you see, so took me out. Took me these Miss Wines, I think their name was, or something. Two old maids, anyway. I got there, I said, what do you want? Oh, I don't care, it cooked, you know. So I just cooked what I wanted to cook, and I just ordered what I wanted to order, and it was okay. So I was there about 2 or 3 weeks, and they talked about this Teddy bringing them rabbits.
Right.
Oh, Teddy will be around soon with rabbits. Yeah, Teddy, little boy sort of thing. So I just washed the kitchen all out, mopped the kitchen out, and I went into the pantry to get something, and in the meantime, the back door opened, and three dogs rushed in, and a man with muddy boots rushed in.
Oh, goodness.
Get out of my kitchen, get out of my kitchen, get out of my kitchen. Poor man stood there and looked. Oh, what's this? Dogs, get out, and clean your boots, don't you dare. And this watch came around. Oh, what's the matter? I said, look at that, look. Oh, Teddy. So good to see. Oh, Teddy.
Oops, that's Teddy.
Oh, not Teddy.
You're Teddy.
Anyway, he apologised and he said, oh, come back with some more. I said, oh, you come back, you clean your boots and you leave those dogs outside. Which he did.
Mm.
Well, of course, he got his eye on me and that's how I stayed there. I didn't get any further. We got married.
Ah, so this was your husband. You know, he wasn't at that stage. No. So he saw you and took a fancy to you. How long did it take you to sort of go, oh, he's all right?
After about 2 or 3 months, he said to me, we didn't have any visitors in, And he said, what are you going to do on Sunday? And I said, nothing, knit, you know, nothing. And he said, would you like to come over to Mum and Dad and have dinner? And I said, oh, yes, be nice. So he came over before we walked around Bush Track across to their house from where I was. And I said, he was Aboriginal, you see, part Aboriginal.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, you see, okay. Have you heard of King Barak?
Oh, yes, very
he's
famous.
King Barak's grandson.
Okay.
Prince Yalandurunga, his name was.
Goodness me.
And so we know his father was Scottish, but his mother was Aboriginal.
Yes.
Well, they made a fuss over me, and oh, Mum couldn't make enough fuss over me, you know. And
I wonder.
Anyway, it just sort of went on and went on and went on. About 6 months after, he said, what are you thinking about doing? And I said, oh, I don't know, sure. I said, I was going to go work my way around Australia. I wanted to go. So he said, asked me, will you marry me? And I said, oh, no, I'll think about it. So I thought about it for a couple of days. Oh, well, he's a good man, you know. Mm. I loved his mother and father. They were lovely people. So I married him and stayed there.
Wow.
Listen to Older Voices. Living History on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with 99-year-old Phyllis Smith. And Phyllis is telling us how she came to be married into what only could be described as Indigenous royalty.
Look, I need to ask you, if you don't mind asking you a few questions, because things have changed significantly for the better over the last 20, 30 years. We're going back into the early 50s now, aren't we, when you met Teddy? Would that be right, early 1950s?
I got married in 45.
Okay, so it was late 40s, mid to late 40s. What were the attitudes like in those days? How easily were you accepted into the Aboriginal community?
Well, they accepted me. It was some people I knew didn't want to accept him. I said, well, if you don't accept him, you don't have me.
Right.
My mother and my sisters loved him.
Right.
They really loved him. But, it was funny, I'm Church of England, yes. I've been all my life. He was Presbyterian all his life.
Right.
Because his mother wanted us to get married to Presbyterian. My mother wanted me to get married to Church of England.
Of course.
He said, what are we going to do? I said, we'll get married to Methodist. Which we did.
That's a wonderful bit of thinking.
So they were both happy about that. It was quite a lot. We didn't clash with their church, so that was quite a lot. We got married to Methodist Church.
Did you have much exposure to the Aboriginal community?
Oh, yes, I was well into it. I'm the oldest elder of the Yarra tribe.
Is that right? Well, that's quite a... I mean, that's a significant mantle to wear, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I haven't been to any meetings for a long time now, but the girls ring me up and tell me things, you know.
Yes.
But I had a great life, really. First of all, we stayed with Mum and Dad. It was a real old shack, actually. You'd have probably been horrified if you'd gone there. Dad built it. It was... slap-dash built up, you know.
Dad wasn't known for his building skills,
No, he wasn't.
No.
half of it was just dirt floor.
Right.
In the sitting room, as they called it, we had a wooden floor, but the bedrooms were dirt floor.
But
mats over the dirt floor.
Phyllis, that wasn't unique. There was a lot of houses like that.
Oh, yeah, Rosemary came along. I couldn't have any children.
Right.
I'd had trouble. I don't know what was wrong, but anyway, that's how I couldn't have it. Anyway, we adopted Rosemary. First of all, we had six cows, two pigs, two horses, umpteen dozen dogs and cats.
That's quite a menagerie.
Ducks and chooks and geese. We used to dress them and sell them. Mum and I dressed them.
Right.
The poultry and sell it. The pigs, I separated the milk and we sold the cream to the cafe, one of the cafes, and fed the pigs with the separated milk.
Yes.
When they had a litter, we sent all the little ones off. And
sorry, can I just clarify something, Phyllis? Did your mum come over to Melbourne to live with you once you got married?
Not live with me. They all came over.
They all came over.
My stepfather was dead by that time.
Right.
He was dead, but my mother and my sister and her husband and two children and the other two girls that weren't married, they came over and we got them a house in Healesville. They didn't live with us, but they lived in
Healesville.
And we moved into a place in Healesville. Have you been to the sanctuary?
Oh, yes.
Well, you know where you go, I don't know what the road might be like now, you go up Don Road then round down to go to the sanctuary.
Yes.
Well, we lived right at that corner.
Where it actually goes left and right, where it forks. Yes, I know exactly where you're talking about.
We lived there. We bought that house and we had the cow and then I thought, now what can I do to earn some money? So Mum said, came over one day, very busy. She'd been into Healesville, came along with the jigger. She said, look, this, you might be interested in this. I wanted someone to look after two girls for 6 months or something. So Mum was a good writer. She wrote a letter for me and sent it off. And this guy, chap came up, Mr. Talbot, he came up. I always remember the day he came. There was a couch like that. And the oldest girl, Barbara, she sat and she was flat like that. And I said, would you mind standing up? And she said, now would you sit, the lady, please? Oh, he said, they're coming here. His wife was a drunk.
Oh,
she was always out drinking. So yes. The two girls, Barbara and Sandra, they ended up being put in our care until they were of age.
Right.
And Barbara used to say, she died 2 years ago, actually. She always used to say, I always remember the first day, Mum. She said, I wonder what had me. Without even, sort of thinking, because I said it to my nieces and that, my sister's children, you sit, you don't flop, you sit.
Yes.
And I said to her, stand up and sit, don't flop.
But she gave them some structure their life obviously had been lacking.
Because she sat like that. Yeah. I said, and ladies do not sit with their legs like that. And she crossed her legs. I know you've got children. We were always told that men crossed their legs.
That's right.
Ladies crossed their ankles.
That's right. I remember my mother telling me that. Yep. Those days are gone. It's all right. We don't.
You'll never see me with my legs crossed. No, I never crossed my legs. Yep. It was all drilled into us. Men cross their legs, ladies cross their ankles. And men perspire, but ladies glow.
Horses, well, now, hang on, I think I can glow just as well.
Horses sweat.
That's
men
right.
Glow. Men, horses sweat, men perspire, and ladies glow.
Don't you love it? I have to say, while we're talking about all these, which we would now call quaint little things, there was a lot of structure in your life as a girl, and in fact, you obviously instilled the same structure into the young women that you came in contact with. Then in the 60s and 70s, was basically all ignored and thrown out the door.
Yes.
Do you think we've actually gone far too far the other way now?
Too much.
And that's probably why we've got the problems.
In speech, everything.
Yes.
Going, coming, having, doing. I'll say, do you run out of breath?
Yes.
Listen to Older Voices. Revisiting through recollections.
My granddaughter's the only relation I've got in Victoria.
Right.
They're in New South Wales, Queensland, West Australia, South Australia, Tasmania.
Goodness me.
All over. But when she came to me when she was about, oh, must have been about 19, her mother died when she was only 14 months old. I had her for a while, and then her father married again and took her there. But this woman had no idea of bringing up girls. They were brought up like yuck.
Yes.
You know, no manners, no way of sitting or doing anything. You take them out for dinner, they look at everything, what do I use, you know?
Yes.
Didn't know how to use the things or anything. So when her stepmother died, and Ben, that one girl's father, and the other girl, they were both married. And she said, what am I going to do now? And I said, well, you better come to me. I was here. I said, you better come to me. So she said, all right. So she came to me. She said, finished school. First 5 or 6 days she was here, she'd lie in bed till about 9 or 10 o'clock, get up and go out and come home at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, hey, wait on. I said, this has got to stop. I said, what about a job? Well, there aren't any jobs about. I said, there are plenty of jobs about. So the next morning I called her, she's still in bed. So I said, now tomorrow morning, if you're not up, a dipper of cold water goes over you. You get up, get your shower, get your breakfast and go up to sleep and look for a job. I said, don't tell me there's no jobs. Next morning, I opened the door. She said, I'm up. She up, had a shower, got dressed, came out, I had breakfast for her. Wait, she went, I've got a job. I said, oh, I thought there weren't any jobs.
Yes.
In this takeaway, that big one, that they don't have a lot of meat or something. It's a healthy place up there in the Glen. Anyway, she got this job. I said, oh, I thought there weren't any jobs around. And she looked at me. So off she went to work. She was there about 6 months, and she said, came home and she said, Nan, I've had an offer of a better job. Well, I said, now there's 2 things you've got to do. You think you like the job? She said, oh yes, it's a better job and more pay. Well, I said, it's a man or a lady? She said, it's a man. I said, well, you tell him that you have to give a week's notice where you are. Oh, I said, no, O's.
It's the right thing to do.
Because I said, a bad name will follow you.
Mm.
Oh, Well, I said, you go out in the morning and you give notice where you are, and then you tell this chap a week you'll come to him, which he did. So that bit better. Then about, oh, 9 or 10 months after, she got a better job. She did the same thing. She told him, and now she's working for herself. She does makeup. She's got, oh, she's that busy. She's been up to New South Wales showing them. She's been over to Tassie demonstrating. She's got all her own business. And they've, her and her boyfriend, they're funny. I said to them, I've been going together for a long time. Actually, they started going together very early. And then she started all this going out to nightclubs and things, and he said, no. He said, I won't be coming anymore now. And he said, I don't like Melinda's way of living. He said, oh, because he's a very straightforward boy. He's a fully qualified carpenter. And I said, oh, I'm sorry about that, Sean. He said, I'll come and see you, Nan. She went for about a year, I think, 18 months. Head popped around the door. I said, oh, hello, Sean. And he said, oh, I'm back. And I said, what? He said, Melinda and I said, oh, that's good. So anyway, they struggled on. They saved up money and they got this house. It had been let go, run down, you know. And they got it very cheap, good deposit and everything. So I said, well, baby's it. Nan, he said, I told you, a house, then a wedding and then a baby.
In that order, that's right.
And he said, that's what I mean to keep.
Yes.
Well, they've been together now in the house for 12 months. He's always done some excellent good work in the house. It was run down. It was an old lady had it. And she just couldn't take notes of the gardener. And out the front there was grass nearly as high as the ceiling. So when she started to clean, they found all roses with all the names on.
Oh, wonderful.
There's about 20 roses there, all named roses. And he rang me up. He said, you know what, Nan? I said, no. So he told me. I said, that's good. So he fertilised them. And they've got a beautiful rose garden. So he's done a lot of work there.
So when's the marriage going to happen?
Early next year.
It is. Oh, how wonderful.
In 2012.
We were going down. He took his mother and I and Melinda. We went down to the water place. What do you call it? The waterfront place down there where all the things are.
In Melbourne and yeah. City. Oh, South...
South Bank or something.
South Bank, yeah, something like that.
Took his mother and I down for a dinner one night. And on the way down, the lights were stopped. And there was a bridal front place. And he said, look there, Melinda, look. And she said, yeah. He said, well, come there and have a look. So
that was his way of saying we're getting married.
So then Melinda said, and she said, Melinda, you don't have to let it cost you a lot. I said, you're not Mary's daughter or something or other. I said, you're just a working girl.
That's right.
I said, you have a nice, simple... She said... But the girls all say,
I know.
Because they want to show off all the time.
Yeah, and they'll spend $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on a wedding, which would set them up as a beginning of a life together.
Right.
I know, it's. I don't understand it.
I said, Melinda. And Sean said, I've been telling you that, Nan.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you do that. I said, I'll be very angry with you because I said, it'll mean you'll be waiting a couple of years before you have that much money to spend.
That's right.
And I said, what for? Just to blow it all up.
Exactly.
To give other people a good time. I said, look, you pick out your people you want to have at your wedding. You get a caterer, a nice place, a hall or something, like I've got for my 100th. I've got it all planned out and everything. I said, you can have quite a nice wedding, much, much, much less than what those other girls have.
Of course.
And I said, then you won't have any regrets after all. I wish I hadn't spent all that much. I said, how many of you heard say that? She said, oh, yes, they have. I said, of course they have.
Yes, that's
when
right.
They sat down and realised, look what I could have done with all that money.
That's right.
I said, don't be so silly.
Talking about marriages and weddings and things, you've married Teddy, you're living in Healesville, your house has got some floorboards, some dirt, which must have been... I'm sure you didn't care. I'm sure it was just a wonderful life.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Great time.
Did you have... I know it might sound like a silly question, but did you have electricity?
Nope.
No, I suspected you didn't. Do you remember the first time you got electricity?
Oh, first time I got electricity was when we came down to Ringwood to live.
Right. And you moved into a house with power, did you?
In Ringwood we did, yeah. But up in the hills we didn't.
No.
We had a big house there. We had lamps. We had water laid on. We were lucky we had water. Up at home, at Mum's place, we didn't have tanks. But where we bought the place on the way out to the sanctuary, that had water but no electricity. But that didn't matter. We had a settler gas lamp. It's the most beautiful light.
Yes.
Oh, it's so soft. You know, I used to sit there every night and crochet or tatting or something or other, and the light was just absolutely beautiful.
And didn't cost you an arm and a leg like the power does these days, did it? No.
We had an ice test. Mm-hmm. We had both an ice test and Kalgoorlie, mm-hmm. and both of those things.
Copper?
Oh, yeah, copper. Light the gasoline, heater for the children's bath and chip heater.
Yes.
Their bath and copper. And I had, with Rosemary, I had five children under 3 years of age.
That would have kept you busy. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, kept me busy.
Yeah, I'm sure you never wanted for something to do.
But you know what we did for our honeymoon?
Oh, no, I was actually going to ask you about that.
We had got a covered-in wagon. You know the old covered-in wagon?
You're kidding me.
We had a beautiful horse, and away we went right up past Turoway, up 3 months Turoway.
Next week, Phyllis continues the story of what life was like on the road with Ted and the menagerie. Then Ted and Phyllis settle down, and sadly, Ted passes on, leaving Phyllis and the children alone. But in her indomitable way, Phyllis turns adversity into triumph, and we find ourselves in India. There's a lot of stories still to come, so do join Phyllis and I next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.